Perspectives on Public Interest. I'm Emily Sutcliffe from Penn Law's Toll Public Interest Center, and I'm so pleased that today we're joined by Eleanor Acer. Eleanor is the Senior Director of Human Rights First's Refugee Protection Program. Eleanor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
For listeners who may be unfamiliar, can you tell us a bit about Human Rights First on an organizational level and also about the specific work you do in your project?
Well, Human Rights First is a U.S.-based human rights organization, and as a result, we really focus on pressing for U.S. leadership on human rights, and that includes U.S. compliance with its own human rights obligations here at home. We work in a range of areas, but for law students, I would just flag one of our oldest projects has been working in partnership with some of the nation's leading law firms to provide pro bono legal representation to refugees who seek asylum here in the United States.
Great. So as a law student, was this the kind of work that you imagined yourself doing as an attorney? And if so, and what drew you to refugee work?
No, actually, after law school, I worked at a number of large law firms and really enjoyed what I was doing. I was actually doing securities litigation. And one day a colleague walked into my office, told me she was leaving the law firm and asked if I could do some follow up for her on an asylum case. And I was just so drawn into the work. I thought it was just amazing to be able, as a lawyer, to help individuals to get the kind of protection that they weren't able to receive in their own home countries. And it really gave me a renewed appreciation for the importance of human rights, how so many people around the world don't enjoy human rights protections, and we here in the United States generally do and should.
Let's hope so, moving forward. So if I'm correct, you've been at Human Rights First for about 21 years, is that right, since the 90s?
So I've been there for about 20 years,
okay,
yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
So during that time, I know you've worked on a bunch of stuff, but what are some of the initiatives or cases that you're most proud of?
Well, you know, for many years, I actually oversaw our legal representation work for indigent asylum seekers. And that was just, you know, incredibly rewarding work, especially helping individuals who were stuck in immigration detention. In recent years, I have spent more and more of my time on advocacy and research. So I would say, you know, in terms of the advocacy issues that I've worked on, I mean, one of the things that has been most rewarding was working to help secure passage of a law a number of years ago that provided protections to Iraqis who were at risk because of their work for or their ties to the United States government.
To many, it would seem that refugees, an incredibly vulnerable population, have increased vulnerability under the Trump administration. Do you think this is accurate? Are you fearful that refugees will become even more vulnerable moving forward?
So I think that many refugees feel that they are incredibly vulnerable. You know, many of these are people who fled from countries where maybe they were targeted because of their race or their religion or their political opinions or something innate about them. And, you know, they came to the United States because this is a country that they believe stood for human rights and equal treatment of people under the law. So that's incredibly disappointing. And, you know, I'm hoping that we will actually, you know, potentially see a bit of a change. You know, hopefully some of the rhetoric will step back a bit. Certainly, you know, during the campaign season, there were all kinds of promises of things like Muslim bans, registration. To some extent, there's already been a bit of a backtracking from that idea of an outright Muslim ban, you know, no doubt in part because there was such an outcry against it, and not just from human rights groups, but from former military leaders, from former national security advisors and Defense Department secretaries, Homeland Security secretaries who had served both Republican and Democratic administrations. You know, they said that kind of approach will just absolutely undermine U.S. national security, not help it.
Right. And so to that point, there's a lot of discussion about a refugee influx. Many people view Arab refugees as potential terrorists. Can you shed light? I know you have a great expertise on this, on the vetting process and some of the statistics about refugees and crime and things like that.
So ironically, there's far from an influx of refugees from the Middle East here in the United States. In fact, the United States resettled only about 12,000 refugees from Syria last year. That is far, far below what would be a real fair share for the United States to take, given its capacity and its history of refugee resettlement. So the numbers are actually incredibly small. And the vetting system is already extreme. It is very difficult for people to get here through our refugee process. They are interviewed again and again. They are subjected to very detailed interviews by representatives of the Department of Homeland Security who travel abroad to the places where the refugees are and interview them in depth. In addition, they undergo all kinds of security checks from a whole litany of U.S. intelligence agencies as well as foreign intelligence agencies and Interpol. So there's all kinds of security checks that are conducted before individuals can come here. And then the checks are conducted again before they even board a plane and again when they arrive. So it's an incredibly secure system. In fact, leading national security experts, former national security advisors, former military leaders who've served both Democratic and Republican administrations have repeatedly said that the vetting is more intense than any vetting given to any individuals coming to the United States. So, you know, there's extensive information out there about how detailed and thorough the vetting is.
Based on your expertise, has American foreign policy contributed to the current refugee crisis?
The current refugee crisis is actually a global crisis. So, you know, you're not just looking at the situation in Syria, where certainly many countries have had a hand, including the United States, in the results that we now have. You're also looking at an Iraqi refugee crisis that has restarted, and clearly the United States bears a huge responsibility for the refugee crisis in Iraq. The United States really had a chance a few years ago, back in 2013, to have led a stronger response and a stronger effort to address the refugee crisis. There was a dire need at that point in time, really, to start a significant resettlement effort, and for the United States and European countries in particular to be giving more money to the frontline states that were hosting refugees, to support those states more through both aid and resettlement, and by encouraging them to actually allow Syrians to work. After many years of just sitting stranded in these countries without the ability to work, with very limited access to education for their children, it became clear that Syrians who were fleeing from their country would not find real refuge in the countries surrounding Syria. So many of them started to head towards Europe. And if the United States and European countries had been more proactive in addressing the refugee crisis and supporting the frontline refugee hosting states, I think you would have seen a very different scenario over the last couple of years.
So in an ideal world, what do you see kind of moving forward that can be done from a social and a governmental perspective to kind of bring about positive change for refugees and for the global crisis?
Well, I think an important starting point is for all countries to comply with their human rights obligations towards refugees. Those are existing obligations under human rights treaties, under customary international law, under refugee protection treaties. The United States can start by setting a good example at home and actually adhering to its own human rights and refugee protection obligations to those who seek refuge on our southern border, and can do more to support the frontline refugee hosting states right now. Right now, any person who tries to flee Syria is essentially trapped in the country. The whole refugee protection regime that was created in the wake of World War II was created so that people would never again be prevented from fleeing from horror. Now we have people who cannot escape a country where they're subjected to, you know, barrel bombs and ISIS attacks. And right now, if you try to flee across the Syria-Turkey border, you're probably going to get shot by border guards.
Mm-hmm. There is a sense of history repeating itself here, right?
Very much so.
Yeah. So what do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions that not only the American public, but even American policymakers have about refugees?
So I think, you know, when you're dealing with any population, people are often afraid of something they don't know or someone they don't know. We found that when people actually get to know refugees in their communities, they are totally transformed. And many Americans actually have refugee stories in their histories. We've found that many of the people who come forward are people who are the grandchildren of Holocaust survivors, or whose parents fled communism, or some other type of persecution somewhere else in the world. There are many Americans actually who are very supportive of refugees. They may not be as loud and nasty as some of those who are not, so they don't get heard as much, but many Americans are incredibly supportive of refugees. And there is, I think, not so much a lack of information, because the information is out there. There's a lot of repetition of false information that refugees cannot be vetted. When in fact they can, and there's extensive information from a whole litany of national security experts, as I said, from both Democratic and Republican administrations, who've over and over again asserted that refugees are more closely vetted than any other population.
So you mentioned kind of people meeting new people and groups that they hadn't already known as hopefully a way forward. But in addition to that, this just seems like a time of great angst, anxiety for a lot of Americans. People are fearful about what will happen to the environment, civil rights, to immigrants and refugees. Based on your expertise, do you have any words of advice or wisdom about where we as a country, as a society, as a people can go from here?
Well, I think for most Americans right now, there are different fears, and those fears have been stoked by some of our political leaders. So hopefully, there'll be an opportunity over the coming years for the public rhetoric to change, for our political leaders to stop encouraging fear and divisiveness, and instead speak with respect about all people in this country. And I think that, it's certainly understandable for some Americans right now to be, concerned about terrorism, to want to make sure that our systems are secure. But the bottom line is that they are incredibly secure, and they're reviewed and improved all of the time. Just because there's been a repetition over and over again of statements to the effect that we're not secure, we actually are. At the same time, then, you've got vulnerable populations feeling like they are being targeted. You have refugees, Muslims, LGBT persons, a whole wide range of people feeling like they may be at risk under this new administration, and that changes and reforms that were advanced to help them are going to be on the chopping block, and that they are viewed as somehow threats to the United States. So, I think we'll have to see exactly what policies really do move ahead under the next administration, but many of these things are just so extreme that there will be a large outcry, and it'll be incredibly important for people around the country to be talking to their political leaders, to their representatives, making clear that what they want this country to actually stand for, and that they want the United States to live up to its human rights obligations. They want the United States to stand up for its ideals and not sacrifice them out of some kind of fears that have no basis whatsoever.
Yeah, the fear seems to have won the day, right? And so it seems perhaps a simple solution that is never simple, right? But making people safe in their homes is a way to make us safe in our home here. So we'll see what happens. We're out of time here, but it's been an absolute pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
It's been a pleasure to speak with you as well.
And thank you to our listeners. If you'd like to learn more about Eleanor's work, please check out Human Rights First Refugee Project Program website.
This podcast was produced by the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Learn more about public interest lawyering at law.upenn.edu/public service. Thanks for joining us.